Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 26, 1997.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, or whatever the case may be, wherever you are, across all these many prolific time zones, from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains in the west, eastward to the Caribbean, south into South America, north to the pole, worldwide on the internet, and I guess all the ships at sea, because I get a lot of email from ships. Top of the morning, everybody, and welcome to the largest live overnight talk show in America. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. And boy, is it going to be an interesting evening. It is, in this time zone, still Memorial Day. And before I cover what I first want to cover, which is very significant, I want to note that it is Memorial Day, remains so, and 1,200,000 Americans have died in wars, our wars. President Clinton is presently in Europe, lobbying to expand NATO to include even Russia in some manner. And there are a lot of people asking questions about the apparent unlimited expansion of NATO. When it finally expands to include virtually everybody, what do we then have? An end of war? An end of individual nations? I'm not exactly sure. But as NATO expands, eventually it includes everything. What then does it become? What is NATO protecting us against? China for a while? North Korea? Cuba? What? So, I'm not exactly sure what the nature of the organization is going to be as it expands. My mom wrote me a letter. She apparently was listening to another talk show, and they were talking about a nurse's memorial, and she almost picked up the phone and called that talk show. Quoting from my mom's letter now, the National Women's Memorial, being built at the gateway to Arlington National Cemetery. I used to walk there every day when I was stationed at Marine Corps headquarters in Arlington. The memorial will be dedicated on October 16th through the 19th. And I have received a deluge of letters from World War II women veterans. There's an example on page 2, and I've got that here. These letters ask that I, 1, support the ceremonies, and 2, attend the dedication. I suddenly realized that this was national news and therefore worthy of your attention. This is from my mom now. Since 4 members of our family were in the service, you in Vietnam, your dad and I in World War II, and your grandfather in World War I, you are a natural to support this affair. If you are willing to give some airtime to this over the weekend, which of course I couldn't because I'm just now live, I'll put the information together and fax it to you. If this weren't a national cause, I wouldn't even mention it. But I think the people putting the affair together would be grateful for the support, as well as veterans of World War I, their families and friends. Here are some of the veteran and state groups planning reunions to coincide with the dedication activities. Air Force Women Officers, United Daughters of the Confederacy, Women's Marine Association, Women's Military Aviators, and SPARS. What do you think, loved Mona Mom? And here is a letter my mom received. Dear Mrs. Bell, what a delight to hear you again this week on Art's radio program. That was a year ago, almost. I wanted to call, but the hour was short, and it passed quickly. Since you served in the military, I am curious to know if you are a member of WIMSA. If so, do you plan to attend the Women's Memorial Dedication events in Washington, D.C. next October 16th, 17th, and 18th? I've enclosed a copy of the dedication survey that I filled out earlier this week. Both my brothers served in the Navy. I served in both the WAAC and WAC, first in Albany, New York, and finally in Stockton Army Air Force Field, California. At the present time, I am a PhD candidate and looking into career options. Would love to hear from you. All my best to Art and Ramona. Sincerely, Helen Wallace. So, there you have it. There is going to be, in fact, a very large women's military memorial dedicated in October. Over this past weekend, there was one dedicated in West Palm Beach, Florida, a women's memorial, but this will be the big one in October. So it sounds like my mom may be part of that. In a moment, I've had, up until today, one UFO sighting in my life. Today we had number two. And I'm going to tell you about it in a moment. And I'm going to bring my wife on the air because I deal in this kind of material, it's hard for me to report on this kind of thing myself. I don't like it. I don't like having to do it, but what I saw today was very clear, not ambiguous at all, and I will describe it in hopes of some of you having seen it. Our feeling is on Memorial Day, a lot of people were out probably barbecuing and doing whatever they were doing in this part of the country, and surely we could not have been the only ones to have seen what we saw. We will describe it in a moment.
Now we take you back to the night of May 26, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Well, all right, folks, here it comes for whatever it's worth. We had a hell of an experience today. Let me bring my wife online if I can. My wife's name is Ramona. She's rarely on the air. Let's see if I can get your mic working. Say something.
Very rarely on the air.
Okay. All right, there she is. Here's what happened today, folks. It was about, I think, about 11:40 in the morning, would you say?
Yeah, about 11:40.
About 11:40. And we were getting ready to go out and get some sun. And so I said, hon, why don't you go close the gate?
Yes. Yeah.
And you said, why don't you come with me?
Yeah.
So we walked down to close. We've got a gate that closes and slides closed. And we went down and closed the gate and started back up toward the house. And it is not an infrequent sight out here. I mean, we've got very wide horizons. We're in the middle of the very serious desert out here. And so you see a lot of sky. And it is not unusual for us to see a lot of jet activity at high altitudes. So I looked up, we both looked up, well actually first I think I did, at a contrail. And it was something leaving a contrail going like a bat out of hell from the east, let me get this straight, east-southeast to the west-northwest. And just to a bit north of the Pahrump Valley. Now, so far not unusual, but I stood there looking at it about halfway up the driveway, saying, God, that thing is going high. And I thought for a second, you know, it might be a launch. It was gaining altitude so quickly and already at a high altitude that I thought I might be seeing a launch. So I said to my wife, let's get the binoculars and go look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran inside and got the binoculars and came outside, and I've got a very, very good set of binoculars, and I was able to resolve the fact that it was a jet aircraft of some kind. I could not resolve what kind. It left a double contrail. Maybe that will help some of you decide what kind it was. I don't know, but it left a big double contrail, and big wide. That's what made me notice it. And as we were standing in the backyard and I was looking at this jet, what did you say?
I was looking at the same contrail, but as I was watching the jet go up, making contrail, I noticed just below it something shining. And I said, what is that? What is that? It was very curious.
And what it was, I looked too, and you could see it with your naked eye at that point. It was a cylindrical, round object. The sun at this point was high, but still behind it, not quite being up in the middle of the sky yet. So the sun could not have been reflecting on it. As a matter of fact, it didn't reflect on the jet.
No.
And this object was glowing like a 100-watt light bulb in front of you.
Literally.
I mean, actually, it was so, I would say, what would you say, silver in color?
Silverish.
Yeah. And it was tracking with the jet for a while, behind it, tracking with the contrail.
Mm-hmm.
And then it stopped.
Like it. I hate to say it. It's like we were. It noticed we were noticing it.
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that either. But
it stopped anyway. It stopped dead cold, and at that point I got the binoculars on it, and it resolved to be much larger, but still just a round, cylindrical, extremely bright. I would say glowing is more of the right term. Now I have no way of judging how high that jet was. Except to tell you, we heard no noise, mm-hmm. So I'm guessing at...
it couldn't be a commercial liner.
40, 50,000 feet, mm-hmm. easily, maybe more. And this object made no noise, mm-hmm. none. And I think we... How long did we stand out there handing the binoculars back and forth and watching this damn thing?
Well, total, about 6 minutes, total.
4 to 6 minutes, somewhere in there, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And finally... it left its sitting position and, like a bat out of hell, started going south and gaining altitude.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I began to lose track of it. My wife, who has better eyes, no doubt, than I do, she was able to hold on to it as it went up in altitude. We did not lose it at the horizon.
No.
We lost it at altitude. It turned into what? Like a just a pinpoint, and then finally... Gone. And so there it is, folks, our second sighting. Now, we both were, what's the right word?
Awake.
awake. Yeah, we were awake, all right. And it occurred to us first to make some calls.
Which we did.
And what was the first number you got me?
Nellis Air Force.
Nellis, that's right. I called Nellis. And they said, we have had nothing in the air for about an hour. Now, what I was going on here was the fact that this was obviously a military jet. And it seemed to me that somebody would be tracking a military jet, first choice, Nellis Air Force Base. And that since this object was so close to the contrail, not, by the way, in it, but near it, It should have been obvious to anybody on radar
that
there was something there. So we called Nellis, and they said, no, they haven't had anything in the air for an hour.
So they're denying their own aircraft? Or
well, or at least an aircraft in their airspace. Yeah. And I also think that they would be aware of an aircraft, even if it didn't originate the flight at Nellis, which I doubt it did because of the altitude. It certainly was in their airspace, so I can't imagine why they would not have tracked the military jet, minus the object we're talking about here. So then I called the local sheriff's office here to see if anybody else had seen it or reported it. Zero. Then you got me the number for...
McCarran National Airport.
And we had no luck there. And then finally we got the number for
Edwards Air Force
Base. Edwards Air Force Base. That was my next thought, that surely they would be tracking it at Edwards. And I got to the control tower at Edwards and did not identify myself on purpose. it's kind of a funny story. And the fellow said, no, we're just in the tower. We don't have radar here. We optically observe from the tower, which I find also strange. Surely there must be radar at Edwards.
Well, so government cutbacks couldn't cut back that much.
Yeah, that's right. The fellow was very nice, and at the end he said, "By the way, what's your name?" And I said, "My name's Art Bell." And he said, "Oh, I know you." Which is why I didn't give my name in the first place. So, there you've got it. It was cylindrical. I'd hesitate calling it a saucer, but it was certainly in that shape. Mm-hmm. It was glowing intensely and moved very, very fast. And then when it finally decided that it was going to gain altitude, it went up and became a dot and went poof and was gone. Gone that fast. So, as well as tracking to the south. So those movements, you know, I thought, well, maybe this jet somehow let out a flare as they do, you know, for practice or whatever. But that was no flare.
No.
And here's what I would like to do, if I can. I would like to allow any of you to ask any questions you have. But most of all, you know, it was Memorial Day. So I figure a lot of people had to be out barbecuing, enjoying the day. And because of the altitude that all of this occurred, it seems to me that it would have been seen widely, maybe in Las Vegas.
Mount Charleston.
Mount Charleston, probably west into parts of California, maybe into the Yucca Valley. You know, I really don't know. But at that kind of altitude, all of this should have been obvious to more than just the two of us. Mm-hmm. We were dumbfounded, I guess is the right word. So, if I can, for just a little while here, folks, either allow you to ask questions of either one of us, but most of all, I want to restrict two lines, please. The first-time caller line, for anybody who also saw this same object, if anybody out there saw this same object, we really want to know about it. And the west of the Rockies line would be the next logical one to restrict. So I'm also going to restrict that. And we're only going to do this for about a half hour. But what we saw was really intense, huh?
Yeah, to say the least.
So west of the Rockies, it's 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. So there you've got it. For whatever it's worth, we saw it. It was real. And
rather bothersome.
You don't like those things.
No,
so.
I don't like that. But I guess what bothers me more than anything else is that you're usually prepared to see something like this at night, but never in broad daylight.
Right, never in broad daylight. That's right. And it is the first object of its sort I have ever seen in broad daylight. At night, it would have been
acceptable.
It would have been dramatic, but acceptable. Mm-hmm. It would have just been a light. But gosh, this was very serious. And I have a hard time believing that the radar installations didn't see it. Or I have also a hard time believing that somehow, maybe I didn't connect with the right person at Edwards. So I guess a second appeal might be to any air traffic controller. Mm-hmm. In either Las Vegas or at Nellis.
Hughes Tower.
Hughes Tower, maybe.
Sky Tower Airport.
Any of them.
It could have been seen at any of those airports.
Right. It was, again, at 11:40. I guess we probably watched through 11:50 in total, probably about 10 minutes. Those are Pacific time. So if anybody out there, air controller or person, knows anything about what occurred today, I would very, very much appreciate a telephone call. And once again, if the audience would please cooperate, I'm restricting two lines to anybody who actually either saw or knows about this object. West of the Rockies, 1-800-618-8255. And if everybody else would please just sort of lay back for a minute, we're going to try to find out if we can get some more witnesses.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 26, 1997. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 26, 1997.
Good morning. I am Art Bell, and my wife, Ramona, is with me. Kind of an unusual circumstance, but the whole day has been really a strange day. And by the way, I guess I better not say that. I was about to say I have some evidence of the phone calls I made, but I will leave it at that.
Now, we take you back to the night of May 26, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, once again, my wife, Ramona, is present and accounted for.
Here I am.
And we're going to take some calls and see if anybody else out there saw anything like we just spent the last 20 minutes describing. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello. Where are you, sir?
I'm in southern New Mexico. My name's Tracy. I'm a deputy sheriff.
Yes, Tracy.
When I was listening to you a little earlier, it kind of struck a note with me, and I'd seen something very similar to what you said you saw yesterday. Said you were trying to think just exactly what it was. It was close to noon, I think. But we live in some high-density air traffic. East-west lanes go right over the top of where we're at. And we used to see an aircraft all the time in contrails, but this particular contrail was going from east to west.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens quite often. They launch missiles from White Sands over into California. I'm not sure where they land, but somewhere up there. But this was an unusual contrail in that it was doubled, and I think that's what really caught my interest to begin with.
Right.
And as I watched it was a very fast aircraft. That's what really struck me, and it was very high. I don't know how to judge the altitude, but it was way up there, higher than the normal traffic would be. And at a point which would be just almost at 12 o'clock right over the top of my head, I noticed another bright object, but this object was stationary, which really startled me.
You got it.
And what happened was, what really struck me as strange is this object began to backtrail the contrail. In other words, it began to travel from west to east. In other words, contrail was going from east to west, but it was backtracking from west to east. It went that way for some distance. And then what appeared to me, it looked to me, and it was very difficult for me to tell just exactly what happened. It happened so fast, but it went... It acted like it veered towards the south and at an extremely high rate of speed. And it just was a really unusual thing. I thought it was unusual to see the aircraft contrail, or I don't know whether it was aircraft or whether it was a missile.
You're a deputy sheriff?
Yes, I am.
Boy, do we appreciate
yes,
your call.
Yes, we sure do.
thank you very, very much. Thank you very much, sir. So there you are. There's one, folks. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Guy in Roseville, California.
Hi, Guy.
Hi. I may have seen what you saw on a different day. I'm a musician. I was traveling down from Jackpot, Nevada, which is the upper right-hand corner of the state, down to Hawthorne. Unfortunately, we went down 306 and were detoured and got stuck with a flat. It was around 10 or 11 p.m. on May 12th.
At night?
Yes. And... Sir, yes.
I really appreciate this report, but we're looking for something, we're looking for confirmation of what we saw earlier today, actually in our time zone.
Gotcha.
All right, I appreciate your report, but thank you very much. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand which line was on. I was listening to everyone else. Thank you for taking my call. My name is Fran. I'm in more or less the middle of Arizona in the Verde Valley.
Yes, ma'am.
During the day today when I was supposed to be paying attention to what I was supposed to be paying attention to, working outside, building a fence, started watching in broad daylight a very bright glowing object at a very high altitude parked up there, stationary. There were the two contrails running roughly east-west, maybe at a diagonal a little bit, and this thing started moving. It was swinging just like it was on a pendulum.
Oh, that's exactly right. Now, see, we hadn't said that, but I saw that too. Did you, hon? Kind of moving as it was stationary, but it was sort of...
To be honest with you,
yeah,
I noticed
swinging.
It stopping, and I noticed it was moving from, it was backtracking the contrail, as the deputy sheriff had said, and then it started moving south after it stopped again.
And climbing like crazy. Mm-hmm.
But the swinging, I guess I wasn't paying that much attention to it, except to try to keep
it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to notice, as you look, for example, with binoculars, you're swinging a little bit, so it's hard to say whether it was precisely stationary or moving a little bit, ma'am, but go ahead.
Yes, and I didn't have any glasses or anything to be able to see any better, and the light down here is intense anyway. But it was very prominent. You could really see it, and glow, my goodness, the thing stood out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
It was really up there, and it was backtracking, and pretty soon, at a great rate of speed, took off toward the northeast along these double contrails. Mm-hmm. And after just a little while, this started in, or I noticed it anyway, at about 5 minutes after 11. I stood there and watched from about 5 after 11 till 11:45. And after, oh, probably 10 minutes or so, this one object was joined by four others.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Well,
there were four more.
We did not see that. Now,
yeah.
Of course, you are west of us.
Yeah, there were four more up there, and the upshot of the thing was it was like a bunch of bird dogs tracking. And they were in the swinging mode like they were suspended on a string and swinging back and forth, and pretty soon they got into a tight cluster, and you could see this whole bunch of glowing objects, and they were backtracking along this contrail. And then pretty soon it was as if somebody clapped their hands and startled them all. And the whole mass of five took off more or less in a tight clutch toward, let's see, it'd be our southeast at a great rate of speed and very high altitude.
All right. Well, look, we very, very much appreciate your report. Thank you. We saw only one object. Mm-hmm. And as I say, this thing was glowing. I mean, not just a little bit, but
a lot.
But a lot. It like there was a field about it or... You know, I couldn't tell you what would make that glow.
It couldn't be a reflection, but it looked like someone shining a flashlight off a mirror.
Yeah, exactly right. That bright. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Art. I live in Henderson, Nevada.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah, and I was at 11:38 this morning. I was up on Black Mountain looking at my new house that's getting built. And it so happens to be it's just east of Sky Harbor Airport, and I've basically got a view of the whole Vegas Valley.
Right.
And you see jets all the time, and what you may have seen is like all these commercial jets that come out of San Diego and L.A. I see them all the time up there. And
no, it was not commercial. I was able to resolve it with the binoculars, and it was clearly military.
Okay.
I couldn't call the kind of jet, but it was a small military jet.
Okay, so it was small, but, you know, what I seen this morning was, you know, I was having trouble with the sun where I was catching, if you know where the second set of aerials is up on Black Mountain.
I do.
It's the ones that would be west toward you, toward Potosi.
Yeah, I've been there.
Okay, you've been there. Yeah,
yeah.
Probably so. So, yeah, I saw what you seen, but what I saw was really, it was more a flat, gray, kind of silver look.
Yeah, it did look silver.
Yeah. It was kind of more of a flat look. I was having more trouble with the sun maybe than you were.
Well, we moved to the shade when we first noticed
really?
It, so we
yeah,
could
we
see it
Yeah, we moved into
better.
The shade of the house,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You saw the object, the cylindrical object?
Yeah, and to me it didn't have round corners, but it was long and rectangular, cylindrical, and it was really tailing pretty far behind the whatever the jet was, and as it went toward you, toward the northwest, over past Potosi and over Mount Charleston, it seemed to speed up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you got it.
Okay.
That was it.
Yeah, and what trouble I had was as it moved toward the northwest, we had quite a bit of construction dust where I was up in Sun Ridge and Green Valley Ranch, and I kind of lost sight of it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. It is, without a doubt, the second great sighting of my life, of
our lives.
Our lives, yeah. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art. This is Clint in Anchorage, Alaska.
Yes, Clint. We're trying to hold this line open, Clint, for people who saw what we saw.
I understand, and I'll say right off the bat that I didn't, but I may be able to educate you a little bit about the apparent ignorance of the air traffic controllers as to what you saw, or that they weren't controlling or were unaware of the traffic that you saw.
Okay.
If the high-speed jet traffic that you saw was at any altitude at all...
Big altitude, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and if it was high enough to be Conan, it would not have been under the control of a tower controller. It would have been under the control of what they call an ARTCC, which, when you hear it on the radio, they refer to it as center. You know,
right.
An airliner will call Los Angeles Center or Seattle Center or whatever.
Okay, well, that's one of the appeals I'm making. I appreciate your input. So somebody at one of those centers.
Exactly. If it was over southern Nevada like that, it would have been Los Angeles Center. And if it was working towards the northwest, like you said, it would eventually worked into Oakland Center's airspace.
Okay, well, maybe somebody at one of those centers saw something or knows something,
yeah,
and can help out. Thank you very much. He's exactly right. And if anybody in one of those disciplines, you know, air traffic controllers, mm-hmm, or at one of the centers can help us out, I would appreciate it. Now, you can send me email at artbell@aol.com. You can fax us, particularly if you saw this, we would enjoy getting a fax. This was a non-trivial daytime serious sighting, and I guess we sat and talked about it for about the rest of the day.
Yeah, we did. And to be very honest with you, this is something that we don't go out, we don't solicit this. We don't go out seeking UFOs or anything else. We don't know if it was or not, but to be honest with you folks, it disturbs me greatly to have to say it. You know, because these are the things, I accept this anyway as something that will occur in our lifetimes. You know, there will be some kind of encounters with things that
you don't understand.
We don't understand. And if I can be accepting of it but yet be disturbed like this, I can imagine what it's going to do to people who see it and don't accept it.
Actually, I experienced what I think a lot of other people experience who have seen these things. You know, you get on the phone and you start calling people and you get absolutely nowhere fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to use my name. It was kind of humorous. I didn't want to use my name. Simply because of the kind of program that I do that deals with this kind of material. So I didn't use my name. And the guy at Edwards, at the end of the conversation, said, you mind if I ask your name? And I said, Art Bell. And he said, oh, I know you. I used to listen to you in Alaska. So that came out of the blue, as well as the object we saw. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Art, my name is Ron, and I've got a little bit of a shocker for you. We saw about four or five of them.
When?
Tonight. I went with four guys to go camping in two different vehicles. We went up to Zion, and we were coming back tonight. And just probably about 20 miles away from, Glendale?
Yes.
We noticed a green flash, like what happened about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And the car in front of me, which is my friend's, I didn't know if they saw it or not, and I thought, well, if I pull them over and tell them, they'll think I'm crazy, but long story short, we pulled over to the side, and it has to have been like North Nellis Range or something, because we saw these objects that were like just floating, I don't know, maybe it looked like a couple hundred feet above the ground, and there was two of them, well, actually there was three at first, and then one of them kind of disappeared, and as it was leaving, It had a red flashing light, and I looked at it and I said, that's not an airplane, that's not a helicopter, and there's no noise.
All right, sir. Well, I appreciate the report. It's not the same object, but maybe there is now an indication of a wider sudden group of sightings that are going on. And, you know, so I don't discount what he said. It obviously, you know, it's not the same object, obviously. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello there, Mr. Bell. I'm calling from Honolulu.
Honolulu?
Uh-huh.
Yes, could you...
Well, I just want to let you know what it is. It's R6413, and that is the new Area 51. And if you look at the very front cover of this month's Popular Mechanics...
Oh, I'm very well aware of this story, sir. We've dealt with it already. Thank you. They, by the way, as far as I'm concerned, they have not moved Area 51. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening. Calling from Vancouver, CFUN?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I saw the craft that was leaving the two... jet streams or whatever you want to call them. What did you get a good look at that? Or was that more of a missile from what that fellow was saying?
I don't understand what you mean.
He's talking about the original craft that we were looking at leaving the contrails.
I saw it about 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock last night.
You did?
Yeah.
All the way up there?
Yeah. Well, at first there was something. There was like light, you know, the sound on a stage when the lights come on, like a poof?
Yeah, sure.
Sort of. Well, there was about 4 of those. And it was cloudy overhead, but there was a sunset in the west, and that's where the lights were. Then all of a sudden, over top, it was like I couldn't see the craft, but I mean, and it was very low. It was about maybe 500 feet above.
Okay, this is an entirely different sighting then, sir. Thank you very much. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hey, Art.
Hey, yes.
I was sitting on my deck this afternoon. I'm in Colorado.
Okay.
Right? I was sitting on my deck while it was like early, maybe late morning, 11 or so.
Yes.
And I heard this really loud jet, okay? And I've been here 11 years, and I've never gotten up to look for a jet. And I stood up, and I'm looking around the sky. We had a lot of clouds today. And I couldn't see anything, but it was just vibrating through the house.
Well, jets do fly, ma'am. You know.
Not here.
No?
Not here.
Well, they do fly in Colorado. Witness the A-10 that went down. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
We were out in Pahrump today over on a little street called Savoy Boulevard. You'll know where that is.
Actually, I don't, but that's fine.
Okay, anyway. It was about 11:30, and gals were in the house watching Jenny Jones. And me and Laird come out and started getting barbecue ready, and we had to look up, and he has a cheap set of binoculars. I wish I had some better ones, but we've seen the same thing. We told the wife about it when they come out, and they thought we'd been drinking too many Budweisers, but we hadn't even started yet.
What did you see, sir? Are you here in Pahrump now?
I'm in Las Vegas, but we have friends in Pahrump.
All right. What exactly did you see?
Well, I'm a person that likes to just look up all the time and watch aircraft, and I've seen what appeared to me to be a military aircraft, just like you described.
Right.
And then this, what appeared to me to be just a silver, round thing, maybe, I don't know, from the distance, maybe the size of a football field. Take off. I sit for a few moments, and then we look back at the jet, and there was a second one there.
Yeah, we didn't see a second one.
Yeah, it was like it was hiding behind the jet.
Yeah, we didn't see that.
Pardon?
We did not see that.
Yeah.
We stood and watched the jet for quite a while.
Yeah, it was going, but the cylinder, like I said, with the distance it was, we figured, me and Laird decided it had to be the size of a football field, and it was kind of round in shape and silver.
Well, it was all that for us, too, and glowing, but I sure wouldn't say football field. Now,
you know, this is very unusual, because he could have very easily seen a multiple, because we were just concerned with the one with one object,
yeah,
after the aircraft. And when you're trying to track one small thing up in the sky and concentrate on that, you're not paying attention to everything else.
That's right. We were intently watching that particular area. So there you are, and I think, you know, we've been able to take a few phone calls, obviously not many. The best way to proceed, I think, with this, of course, I called Peter Davenport immediately at the Seattle UFO Reporting Center and gave my own report. But the best way, I think, to proceed with this now is to invite any of you who actually saw this object, the same one we saw, to fax us or email us or send us a letter or whatever. Again, the fax number is area code 702-727-8499. And do you have anything to add?
Yeah, well, you know, don't bring me back on here for another incident like this. I mean, it's all right. I like being on the air with you, babe, but, you know, not under these circumstances. I mean, you know, it's a little pressing for me.
Yeah, how long ago did we see that other thing? So long ago.
It would be almost 4 years ago.
Almost
now.
4 years?
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. I'm going to soon be 52 years old, and this is the second object I've seen in my whole life. And I won't make you say your age, but I think It's only the second one you've seen, isn't it?
Yeah, same here.
All right. Well, there you are, folks. No question about it. We really saw a beaut today, Memorial Day. So I suspect a lot of the rest of you saw it as well, and we would like confirmation. Thanks, hon. All right, that's it, folks. We're going to break, and then I've got something coming up for you after the top of the hour. Weird Times, the Old Homestead.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 26, 1997. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired May 26, 1997.
Good morning to you, those of you who are just joining us. We spent the past hour with my wife describing a sighting that we had of a UFO. A very serious UFO earlier today at about 11:40 in the morning. Now, I just want to respond to several of the faxes that came in, which said, where the hell was your camera? And actually, it's interesting because I just now began reflecting on that. At the time, I thought there was no point because I've got a good 35mm camera, but it does not have enough zoom to it to have been meaningful, to have captured anything except a light. Now, through the binoculars, it was clearly saucer-shaped, cylindrical, and glowing and very bright. And now that I reflect on it, if I'd thought about it at the time, I do have an 8mm video camera, which will zoom like 30 or 60 times, and I should have thought of that. I didn't at the time. I mean, it was the whole event took about 4 minutes, and so what do I say? I should have thought of the video camera. I didn't. I stood transfixed with my wife as we watched this. In a moment, we're going to move on to other things.
Now, we take you back to the night of May 26, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
We're going to go up into the upper Midwest, Wisconsin, and talk with a young fellow named John McKinnon. John was the manager of a television station in that area. John, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Mr. Bell.
Good evening.
Good morning, I guess it is.
Yeah, it's morning. I'm going to have to ask you to stay good and close to your phone, John.
Okay, is that all right?
That's much better, John.
Okay,
keep it right up there.
All right.
All right, John. You were manager of Channel 13 in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin?
That is correct. I was.
Was. All right. What did you do as manager there? Explain the story, if you would,
well,
please.
Well, we had basically a pretty dry format, political shows dealing with the governor of Wisconsin, interviews and with state representatives and so on and so forth. And I wanted to inject a little bit more entertainment into this station. And Well, I've been a long-time listener of your show, Art, and I thought, well, I'm going to try to do something like Art Bell.
All right, now, bear in mind, folks, this is a public station, a PBS-like station.
Yeah, it's a hybrid, basically a combination of PBS, and, of course, we do get some local production here. So we reach a variety of audience. We try to keep it... we tried to keep the station within the confines of attracting viewers in the immediate vicinity of our area.
How was the station supported? By donation, PBS?
It was actually funded by a group, I'm not sure if I should mention the cable station, by a cable entity.
All right.
So it was funded by them, and I don't want to mention any names.
All right, no, that's fine. So, don't need to.
And then the city and the government was given that money in turn, and then we were, they'd been working for some 12 years, around 12 years to get this station off the ground. 9 months ago, they hired me to get it off the ground, and nobody thought it would work, and it... But we did get this thing off the ground, and it became quite popular. In fact, it had, from all, my estimations, had at times actually outrated the local networks, even in prime time, because of the kind of programming we were putting on.
All right, what exactly were you doing? You said you were going to sort of do a TV version of what I was doing here on the radio.
I started out with an investigative report on this gentleman in the area. His name is Billy D. He's very well known in this area, who has claimed to have been abducted by a UFO. Now, let me preface this with, I'm very conservative. I'm a lifelong Irish Catholic. I have never seen a UFO, and like your wife, I don't want to see a UFO either. I'm not interested in it. And I was very skeptical about Billy D, and the board of directors of this channel was very skeptical about having Billy D on this station.
They didn't much like your doing that sort of thing.
They specifically said that it was not a good idea, but I went ahead and did it anyway, because I had an opportunity to talk to this gentleman, and much to my surprise, the credibility of his story was, and the emotion that he told it with, and he was very articulate, just left me with little doubt that he believed every word he said. Whether or not I believed it was not anybody's, is not really any of my business. I don't...
Okay, John, so what did you do, a series of shows with him?
Well, I started, I only did two shows with him. I did only two shows with this guy, and the thing hit the front pages of newspapers in the Midwest, was put over the AP wire, and God only knows how far it went from there. I know it went as far as... Madison, Wisconsin, and parts of Iowa, and things like that. And I only did two shows with him, and then that resulted in Billy D doing shows in St. Louis, Missouri, Syracuse, New York, and even Tom Brokaw's NBC Nightly News people started to do a show on him, but was very, very oddly interrupted by some frequency problem that they were having at the time, and that's going to have to be rescheduled. But that I'd done two shows of that. Now, I'm the general manager of a television station, and I only planned on interviewing Billy D once, but I figured I'd have him back again, and it just became too intrusive on my job. I would go out of the door, and it wouldn't matter if I was at the bakery or the bank or getting a hamburger or something. Everybody thought I was the interviewer of the Billy D, above and beyond with Billy D, not the general manager of the station. So I had to duck out of that position and replace myself with another interviewer. So this other interviewer was getting the same kind of response. I mean, it was almost phenomenal, the kind of response he got. The local Fox affiliate was considering doing... putting him on the air to reach a market that would have been over 1 million people. It just got out of control, and he deserved a larger market than ours, which is considerably smaller than that. I didn't really want to be attached to.
So in other words, you removed yourself as interviewer,
right,
and went back to being station manager because you were beginning to be recognized for doing that kind of work instead of doing what you were doing, which
right.
was managing a big TV station.
Right. Well, this is actually it became a big TV station. It shouldn't have been it had no business being a big TV station.
Well, it was VHF though. It was Channel 13, right?
Right. It had no business being a big, but it turned into a big TV station because I thought, hey, you know, I'm going to follow Art Bell's format, and but I would warn any general manager in any station in this country to be very leery of doing things like that, because this resulted in actually one of my guests, not the UFO show that was on here, but one of my guests that I was going to do about 2 days before I was fired, or terminated, as they so kindly called it, I was going to do a show with a gentleman right down the coast, I guess right down the lake from here. And he received death threats. So you got to be really careful about dealing with this kind of material. It was absolutely incredible, the kind of response we were getting. And I, not only that, I didn't want to be associated with UFOs.
I understand.
I haven't seen one. I didn't want to be associated with it. And, you know, I'm not sure that I'll believe in an alien until it comes up and kicks me in the shin.
Yeah, I'm with you, actually.
But I'm telling you something, there is something very strange going on out there.
All right, so let's move on now.
Okay.
I did a program, a several-hour interview with Elizabeth Clare Prophet.
Right, and I heard that. And I had seen the following, either it was before or the following day, something on hard copy, which had made Elizabeth Clare Prophet look like fanatic. Now, this was the straw that broke the camel's back for my station and for this job that I was holding as general manager / program coordinator. Now, I had an interview with Elizabeth Clare Prophet, and I found her to be a lovely lady with sort of an intensified beauty and gift for life.
That's exactly how I found her too.
And I couldn't make her look bad. I had no, you know, I mean, I thought, you know, I'll try to get in.
In other words, you couldn't fairly make her look bad. Now,
well,
you,
that's true.
You can come on as some of the tabloid shows have, and you can do a story that is negative. It can be done. I mean, let's face it.
Well,
you
yes,
can
I certainly could have. But I wanted to follow the Art Bell format. I wanted to give these people a fair shake, a fair shot, without interjecting my preconceived notions that I've grown up with all my life.
Right.
You know, and I don't care, you know, if somebody believes in reincarnation, Zen Buddhism, if they're Muslims, if they're...
In other words, whatever.
Yes. It doesn't matter to me. That was not my business.
So what did you do? Did you go to Montana and interview her?
No, I did a phone interview with her, and I was going to insert her face when she was talking in other B-rolls.
Oh, I've got you.
Okay. And I had that day said to one of my board of directors members, I said, I had this fantastic interview with Elizabeth Clare Prophet, and she was fantastic. She was quite a lady, and her husband's from Wisconsin, and this is something else, and she really came off great. I'm telling you, that really, really did it, because this is my feeling, and I have to say that this is my opinion, because if I don't, then I'm hurting myself in terms of libel or whatever. But it's my opinion that board of director turned around and said, this guy is out of control. He's interviewing Elizabeth Clare Prophet. He's got this Billy Dee thing going all over the Midwest, all the way to the East Coast.
And in addition, I think you had followed up on another one of my guests, Charles Osman.
Oh, well, Charles Osman is actually a friend of mine.
Oh, no kidding.
I had worked in I was director of multimedia productions at a software company in Berkeley, California, and had the opportunity to meet Charles on a number of times. And I wanted to, of course, after I heard him on his show, I was like, oh, my God. Well, yet Charles is very difficult to understand, and his conversation and discourse is
very rapid and very technical.
Right, and he actually speaks a different language than
just about. He does.
However, he's brilliant.
Yes.
And I thought, if I could distill this and put it in layman's terms within the framework of a documentary, that I would be doing a great thing.
So here you were, Charles Ostman,
right.
Billy Dee,
right.
Elizabeth Clare Prophet,
right.
And your board of directors.
They just couldn't, they couldn't take it.
Even though the ratings were soaring,
were outrageous. They were outrageous. They were outdoing local networks in prime time, in my opinion, and from what I could observe. There was not a single person that had any kind of, if they had Channel 13, they watched Channel 13 the night that Billy Dee was on, or the night that this sort of above and beyond investigative reports was on. They would watch that. That
okay,
is what they saw.
So there it was, going like crazy, but the board of directors going crazy, and they canned you, but they didn't just...
Well, they didn't just get me. I had just got done doing a public service thing for the YMCA, and it's the middle of the day, and they had walked in and handed me a two-sentence note that said, "You, as of May 7th, your contract is terminated." They didn't give me any reasons. Now, this raised quite a ruckus in the press. It made the front page of the Green Bay Press Gazette. It made the front page of the Door County Advocate. Both, I just got to say that they're fair papers, and they were thinking, well, you know, this guy was getting some kind of press before this, and I was, and we were. This channel was doing very well and getting great press, really all over the Midwest before this happened.
So somebody handed it to you, and I'm sure you must have said, why?
Well, I said, why? Yes, I couldn't believe it. My jaw dropped down to the ground. I mean, given the success of a channel that had little or no chance of surviving without some sort of entertainment formula. And it wasn't just some people. It was the city manager and two of the members of board of directors.
The city manager came to fire you?
Yes.
The city manager?
Yeah.
And two members of the board of directors?
Right. And they came in and handed me this note, and I just couldn't believe it. So I had to call my attorney and say, well, what do I do now? And he said, well, don't give him the keys to the studio. And I said, well, I said to the city manager and the two board of directors, well, I can't give you the keys. My attorney's advised me against it. Well, they had the police chief apparently was about 2 minutes away.
The police chief?
Right. The police, and this guy, how he ended up being 2 minutes away I'm speculating about.
An amazing coincidence, huh?
Well, I don't think so. That guy was in there, like, in about 2 seconds.
So now you've got the chief of police coming in.
Right. The police chief grabs the phone out of my hand, hangs up on my attorney, and then... and then says, you either give me those keys to this studio or you're going to be arrested right now. Well, I gave him the keys to this studio because I didn't want to be, of course, you know, I didn't want to spend any time.
You didn't want to go to jail.
No.
Yeah, I've got you.
So I gave him the keys to the studio.
And left?
And now they confiscated all my tapes.
Including the Elizabeth Clare Prophet interview?
The Elizabeth Clare Prophet tape, to the best of my knowledge, is at the police department right now as we speak.
What?
I am not kidding. It is absolutely remarkable. And what they had done is not only beyond all this, they had just yanked the plug to the station.
You mean wait a minute. You mean they turned it off the air?
Off the air. It was black. There was nothing on.
For how long?
For at least 4 days.
4 days. The station went dark for 4 days.
4 days.
So, in other words, after you left the premises, they just went and turned the switch off.
Oh, yeah. They,
holy mackerel.
That was it. That was it. You know, and it was really, you know, I love God, country, and in the case of Door County, Wisconsin, cherry pie, and my mom and dad. But something is peculiar, something very peculiar about this kind of...
Well, and here may come the answer. The station then came back on the air after 4 days...
And ran church services, and that's it.
You mean that's all they run now?
They do an occasional, some sort of video thing about how to make your own video thing and church services, and that's it.
Well, if I had to guess,
yeah.
I would guess, and I said this to you earlier today on the phone,
right.
That you ran into a board of directors full of fundamentalists, and that's just a guess.
Well, I just can't, you know, all I can say is I really enjoyed your show, and the general population, the general community,
enjoyed it.
Incredibly supportive of me.
All right, John. Maybe there's some people that know about this. If there are, I sure would like to hear from them. Hold on, John. Our East of the Rockies line is 1-800-825-5033, particularly if you're aware of this situation. John McKinnon is my guest.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 26, 1997. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 26, 1997.
Great to be here. My guest is John McKinnon. John is way up in, let's see, where? Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. He tried to do a TV version of what I'm doing here on the radio, and the police arrived and took the keys, turned the station off the air. And it's actually quite an amazing story. John's now out of a job. It was Channel 13 up there. And if you know anything about this or have any comments on it, I have one line available only. We'll scratch that. That one's gone too. We'll get back to John and your calls in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 26, 1997.
Well, all right, summing up, here's John McKinnon, manager of Channel 13, up in a place called Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, and he began to run some programs that were modeled after my program, except for TV, and they fired him. Not only did they fire him, but the police came in, took away the keys, hung up on his attorney, and turned the station off the air, and then when it came back, it was running religious services. John, is that about right?
I That's absolutely correct, Art.
Mm-hmm. Is there any chance that you're going to be able to get your interview back?
Yes, I have an attorney working on it. Now, I'm not a litigious person. I'd rather be sued than sue someone, frankly. But in this case, I do want my tapes back. And I think that Billy D deserves his tapes back. And there are a couple tapes in there that I had produced when I was in California and in New York, and even when I wasn't even in Wisconsin, that I really do want back.
So they took all of them?
All of them.
God, what? I gave you my assessment or what I thought. What do you think happened?
Geez, Art, I don't know. I've heard so many different things. I've heard Billy D was suspected that they'd been tipped by people that said, hey, you know, get this guy off the air before he does some damage in terms of covert operations, which I'm very suspect of because I'm not a conspiracy-oriented person. But after all that, this is all that's happening, I'm starting to be a little bit...
Beginning to wonder, huh?
It's a little peculiar. One of my guests that I was going to have on the show declined to be on the show because of a death threat. I mean, and not only was he threatened with a death threat, but his niece and nephew out on the West Coast were also, quote-unquote, targeted. The whole thing is so out of sync with the way things had been going with the station that...
Have you heard anything from the board of directors or the station since the day you had to hand over the keys to the police chief?
I've been in constant communication trying to get some of the tapes back with them. Doing everything I could to stay out of litigation. But then the newspaper did my job for me. They got the Wisconsin State Attorney General to force them to hand over the reasons why I had been fired.
And do you have that list?
Well, I don't have the list with me. It was finally released at 4:30 on Friday afternoon before the paper could publish it. And I was told by the reporter, Mike Shaw, from the Door County Advocate, that it appeared to be written out at the last moment.
Well, did
he? They handed him a handwritten notice that said something like, shows had been cut off a minute short, or some technical problem, or something like that, appeared to be completely... as part of you're in this business, you know that you have technical difficulties at times.
Yes.
And so
they tried to say that you had cut shows off or had technical troubles.
Right.
And that's why you got fired?
Right.
Well,
not too many people are buying it.
I understand. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John McKinnon. Where are you, please?
Good morning. All right. My name is Eric. I'm in Chicago right now. I'm from Door County. John, I can explain to you exactly what went wrong, what happened.
Okay.
Door County, as you know, relies heavily on tourism. And
yes,
it's not just statewide tourism, it's nationwide.
It's worldwide, actually.
And they don't want anything tarnishing that. I have family up there that own businesses. It is a complete mom-and-pop, strawberry pie, all-American, red, white, and blue tourism.
Yeah, but how does it...
Well, there's more to it than that.
All right.
There's more to it. You can spend an entire week on stories from Door County alone. I mean, it's just phenomenal what happens up there. I've lived in Door County, Texas, Colorado. I now reside outside of Chicago. Nowhere except Door County have all of my neighbors witnessed UFO activity. Now, you know, it could be the Air Force Base across the bay.
This
Lonely
is
nights
true.
In the wintertime. It could be anything.
It is true, huh?
This is actually true. I've heard from very credible people, not just Billy D.
My high school teachers.
You know, but just regular old folk who've said they've seen a lot of activity here in northeastern Wisconsin.
Now, did Billy D show you, or did you get footage of the medallion?
Yes, the medallion. Are we talking about some sort of faux satellite thing that they brought in here to act as a diversion?
Well, no, it's more of the gift. It was the little medallion that he was given.
No, he didn't show me that.
Okay. The rumors, I had personally never seen it, but the
right.
The rumors of these stories go back way back.
Okay, but look, what I don't understand out of all of this is how do a few shows modeled after mine, shown on television there, result in somebody getting fired with the police coming in and shutting the whole station down? Come on, folks.
Well, it's drawing all this publicity to Door County, and it's directly tied to Door County, the Door County Advocate, the Green Bay.
Yeah, but why would that stop tourism? I mean,
it's not the image that they want.
No,
you also have to remember Peterson. I believe it's Peterson Builders. It's been a while since I've been up there. I mean, big naval contracts. There's also there's rumored to have a lot of retired FBI and retired CIA agents that live up there, if not full time, then during the summer or the winter months.
Really?
It's a great place to retire.
Well,
there's a lot of federal agents up there that are retired.
Well, yeah. John's retired, just not the way he wanted to.
No, but Art, I've come to know, and I know, and I'm sure that you know, that this is a transient business. And if I can take a station that started off with no station and make it into something, then I'm employable elsewhere. And I'm not being litigious over trying to get my job back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just really like those tapes back, and they have no reason to hold on to them, really. And they're not going to show them. And this guy's right. The population booms from a population of something like 15,000 people here in the winter to over a quarter of a million to half a million
wow.
people in the summer.
All right. Well, that's a lot of people, all right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John McKinnon. Where are you, please?
I'm just outside Chicago. You know, I got relatives up there in Wisconsin. Last time I was visiting, they had mentioned something really kind of strange about the G on the Green Bay Packers helmet. It was the same G on the Heaven's Gate webpage.
Actually, ironically, that is true.
They won the Super Bowl, and there's some weird story. I didn't get the whole thing, but...
That's weird, all right.
It's very, very strange. I haven't talked to them about it, but there was something weird they were telling me about. I can't remember the story. Do you know anything about that?
I think it's totally unrelated, but I did actually notice it. I'm not sure that it has anything to do with what's going on here. But yes, the Green Bay Packers, I think, are completely disassociated.
Imagine if you had done a story on that joke.
Oh, well, I would have been run out of town.
And
I wouldn't be living here now.
You have not yet been run out of town, I take it.
Well, I really don't go out anywhere anymore.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air. With John McKinnon. Hello.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, you.
Okay. I just called because I heard you say you wanted confirmation on this story. And I studied with Elizabeth Clare Prophet, and we get faxes regarding media coverage that she gets.
Yes.
And so we had heard about this. I felt really bad about this fellow, and I wasn't really sure about the whole story because I was kind of falling asleep listening to you, but when I heard her name mentioned, I woke up. And so was he the one that was going to air a program every week on her? Is this the same fellow?
No, actually I was going to air it every week for 4 weeks.
Yes, okay, you are.
I was going to. I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
All right, ma'am. Thank you very much.
I was going to rerun it.
Yeah, it was going to run for all of 4 weeks. Now, all you were doing is what I did, and that is not a hatchet job on Elizabeth Clare Prophet.
Well, I was giving her a fair shot.
That's all, right?
Just a fair shot. I wasn't there to judge her or her beliefs, but actually, in the long run, I found her philosophy and her personality to be very humanistic and quite beautiful.
Life-affirming, actually. First-time caller line, you're on the air with John McKinnon. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Morning.
Morning, John.
Where are you, sir?
New Orleans.
New Orleans, all right.
The party capital of the world.
Yep.
John,
yes,
the town that you were hosting the show in, is it kind of like a religious-type town, or...?
No, it wasn't a religious... We did run only on Sundays, had we run any kind of religious... church services.
Until after the station went off the air and then back on the air, now it's almost all religion.
I would say at least 90%.
That's almost all.
Yes.
Okay, see, my assumption is number one, the reason that the police chief got involved could be due to the fact that possibly a show like you were, you know, having on the radio could cause some
TV.
Oh, I'm sorry, TV could cause some type of, you know, panic in the town. Also, if it goes against their religious, if it's a, you know, religious town, it may conflict with their beliefs and their social standards, you know, or their ways of, you know, living.
Yeah, but this, sir, he was, for example, doing a show with Billy D, and he was talking about a guy who claimed abduction. That's not going to cause anybody to panic. Or, for that matter, a fair interview with Elizabeth Clear Prophet is not going to cause people to go running into the streets screaming.
Well,
these are not the things of which panic are made.
Well, think about it, Art. I mean,
if somebody
walks outside of their house and someone was abducted, okay, and say for instance you have this 6-year-old or this town that's mainly a bunch of retirees, that's enough to cause, you know, some kind of concern, you know.
Well,
he's walking down the street with a walker, and all of a sudden a spaceship comes by and.
All right. Well, so do you think you were panicking the people up there?
Geez, I don't know if it was panic. I think that it made them feel very uncomfortable. And that's not really an excuse to deny somebody the First Amendment right to a public station. This was really a real adulteration of any kind of First Amendment rights. I wasn't taking any stance at all on these shows. I wasn't saying to people, go out and believe it. Oddly enough,
or even I believe or anything else. You
no,
were just doing interviews, just the way I do, just doing
exactly
interviews.
Exactly what you did.
Yeah, okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John McKinnon. Hello.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had the wrong number.
All right, take care. West of the Rockies, call the wild card lines. Area 702-727-1295. All right, you can't give us your last name, sir. You're David, and where are you calling from, David?
From the Nano.
Okay. Oh, okay. Anyway, you're on the air.
Hi. It's the whole thing with the TV station, it's just a case of censorship. It's totally unreasonable. Like, completely. You know, the police chief or anybody has absolutely no right to do anything like that.
John, is that the way you,
I think it is unreasonable, Arj. I think that, in my opinion, and I have to preface it with my opinion is that this was the most unadulterated case of censorship that I have ever seen in my life, and frankly, somewhat reminded me of Germany in some earlier days.
Let me ask you this, John. Before that horrible moment of the police chief coming in and the two board of directors and who else?
The city manager.
The city manager. That before this critical moment, did they give you any warnings, counselings, you know, you better quit this kind of stuff?
They never said you better quit this kind of stuff. I argued for it, and there were some heated discussions among myself and the board of directors, but there was never a direct order. Hey, stop it.
Stop it.
If there was a direct order to do that, I would have stopped it. That's my job. My job was to listen to the board of directors and do exactly what they said. And I would have stopped it. I think that they were afraid to say, hey, stop it, because then they look bad.
Yeah, that could be. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John McKinnon. Hello.
Hi, Art. It's Dan from Arnold, Missouri.
Yes, sir.
I must say, Zucker, this in a way sounds familiar. If you remember when I gave my interview about somebody sticking a transmitter out in that field where our friend Ace and I had that encounter?
I don't specifically remember that.
I know it's been a while ago. Well, it turns out that it was a religious station that had done this.
That had done what?
Where Ace and I had our Bigfoot / UFO encounter, that the transmitter stuck out there. Ace had learned later that he said that he believed that a local station, which is a religious station, had put it out there.
Oh, you mean as a hoax?
No doubt it's a hoax. They had a transmitter put out there, which is weird because nobody remembers anybody ever coming out and actually constructing it.
Okay. Well, I don't know what that has to do with the price of tea, but interesting. Wildcard line, you're on the air with John McKinnon. Hello.
Hello there, Art.
Yes.
Hello there. I'm sorry to backtrack with you, but a few days ago you were talking about
Actually, you can't, sir. Does this relate to my guest?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, well then call me when it does. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John McKinnon.
Hi, Art. This is Rick down in Bootsy, Louisiana.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I've been listening to what you've been saying. I had a friend who was working for Martin Marietta up there at one time in Wisconsin, and she told me the same things about the area. She said it was basically very weird, very strange as far as people, UFOs. The only other UFO encounter she had ever had was in Pascagoula quite a few years ago, about two men that were abducted earlier. And when she got up to Wisconsin, that was basically all they kept asking her about was this incident that happened in Pascagoula. And they all kept saying there was something similar up there, but then nobody would talk to her any more than that.
All right. Thank you. So is there a, John, do you think there's a different attitude about this sort of thing up there?
Well, people don't, they don't want to talk about it. And I was told specifically at our first board of directors meeting when I was first hired that Billy D was a joke and that we should not allow Billy D to do any kind of television show on Channel 13. And I met Billy D, and he's not a joke. The guy was very, very serious, and he had a very credible story, and he was very emotive, and I had a very difficult time disbelieving him.
All right, well, what are you going to do now, John?
Well, I don't know. If there's somebody out there looking for a good producer or program coordinator, they should get in touch with me.
But, how do they do that?
Well, they can call me at 414.
Now, you be careful. You
give
out
that's all right.
All right.
414.
Right.
746-9725.
All right, that's area code 414-746-9725, right?
Yeah, yes, and I'd like to continue this mode of investigative reporting, but I'm afraid I'm not sure I would like to, but I'm not sure that it's prudent. And I empathize with the kind of press that you've gotten, and
Well, you need a thick skin, John.
I don't know if I have the kind of thick skin that you have. You've had to go through quite a bit in your pursuance of these kind of issues, and I can only congratulate you on your fortitude. I'm.
Well, John, I'm lucky. I have people who support me at the network who don't buckle to the kind of pressures that apparently your board of directors felt to be under or was under or whatever.
Right. Well, I'm hiding out in a cabin here in Wisconsin, and I'd like to get the hell out of here.
Hiding out in a cabin in Wisconsin?
If, pretty much.
How many?
I'm not very happy about it, Art.
John, how many people were under you? How many people worked for you at the TV station?
Well, we had quite a few people who did, not very many paid people, but a lot of people who did it for internships and
volunteering and that sort of
work and that kind of thing. Yeah, but like the gentleman from Chicago said, this area gets very active from people all over the world, and I find it a little ironic that they fired me just before summer, just before you get these hundreds of thousands of people converging on this.
It sounds to me like there might have been a connection. I'm sorry it happened to you, John, and I hope you get some calls and get reemployed.
Well, I hope so, too. And say hi to Chris Kelly for me and Elizabeth Clare Prophet. They're very good people.
Take care. There you have it, folks. That's John McKinnon, who tried to do a TV version of what I am now doing. Ended up with the police surrounding him, turning the station off the air. Yikes.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 26th, 1997. listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from May 26th, 1997.
Good morning, everybody. This probably is correct. It says, a quick primer on ATC or air traffic control. Art, you were calling control towers to find out about your UFO and the high altitude jet you saw. It is not at all unusual for them to be unaware of the traffic you were asking about. If it was at any altitude at all, and it was, it would have most likely been under control of an air traffic, air route traffic control center, or ARTCC. In the case of your traffic, it would have been under the control of Los Angeles Center in radio communications. As it progressed to the northwest, it would have come under the control of Oakland Center, unless the traffic was going to land at one of the air ports or Air Force bases. You called the tower controllers, who would have been unaware of that traffic. In point of fact, if the traffic was above 30 or 3,000 feet AGL, it would not have been in the airspace controlled by Nellis or Edwards. You called the wrong people. Well, that figures. Also, 99% of the controlling that a tower controller does is done visually. Not all towers have radar screens in them. If they do, it is a repeater of the local approach control. I could go on and on, but you get the picture. Signed, Clint. Thank you, Clint. Yes, I'm sure you're exactly right. I have absolutely no idea what normally would be done. I just know what I saw. All right. We're going to go to open lines here shortly. Anything you want to talk about is absolutely fair game.
Now, we take you back to the night of May 26, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, we're about to go to open lines. Again, the president in Europe right now, and it is very interesting that our president appears prepared to nearly in an unlimited fashion expand NATO. And I'm beginning to wonder what the nature of NATO is going to be. It's even going to include, to some degree, Russia and all of the ex-Soviet satellite nations. They'll be included. And slowly, NATO is becoming a worldwide organization. NATO, of course, originally formed to protect Europe, basically, against a Russian invasion that would come through the gap in Germany or something, or whatever else. But now we are expanding NATO to be what, is my question. One world government? One world control of some kind? I don't know. The end of all wars? Well, I guess if everybody joins NATO, there wouldn't be any wars. I mean, that isn't the way the world really works, is it? So, what happens when everybody finally joins NATO? Then what is that organization, exactly? The Mazarat volcano in the Caribbean is getting ready to let go again, maybe. It has been in constant ash eruption for the past 10 days, and it could either continue spewing ash or it could blow. Nobody knows for sure, so they're keeping a very careful, watchful eye on Montserrat. So beyond that, I've got several other items, but I'm going to hold them and I'm going to go to open lines here and let you say whatever you want to say, and I'll sort of drop the rest of this in as we go. There is one other item. This is a very interesting article indicating that in Japan, it's from a Japanese newspaper, a project reminiscent of Steven Spielberg's movie Jurassic Park is underway. A team of scientists there are going to attempt to bring prehistoric mammoths back from 10,000 years of extinction. This is no joke, folks. The team, headed by a professor of animal husbandry at Kagoshima University, plans to extract sperm from the bodies of mammoths buried in the Russian region of Siberia. Once the sperm has been extracted, they will use it to fertilize ova taken from living elephants. And in this way, they expect to be able to bring back the woolly mammoth. That's incredible. According to Godot, the research project is the first of its kind in the world and will take advantage of Japan's advanced technology in genetics. Researchers from the U.S. and Britain who have probes equipped with lasers are expected to join the search for the remains of mammoths, and Russian scientists are planning to take part in the effort as well. So, yesterday's science fiction becomes today's science reality. And we've done shows in the past that have speculated about doing this exact kind of thing. And now they're going to do it. So there you've got it. Watch out. Coming soon to a zoo near you from 10,000 years ago, a giant woolly mammoth. And who knows what all else? Reminiscent of Jurassic Park? Oh, my. And I sort of wonder if it's such a good idea. What do you guys think? In other words, if something has gone extinct, isn't there usually a good reason for it? What about the old, it's not nice to tamper with Mother Nature? In other words, to bring back an animal that today would have no natural predator and might be a predator itself, whether it be to vegetation that we currently have or other animals, somehow I've got this feeling that we're rushing in where angels and even God will not tread, because the woolly mammoth does not seem to have come back on its own. And if we bring it back from 10,000 years ago, we're going to get ourselves into deep doo-doo. And that's just me and a little worry, and I don't know if it's a justified worry or not, but it's doing, in my opinion, God's work, except that we're not gods. And something like this is going to bite us in the butt. I just know it is. I just know it is. All right, there's one more item, and then I'm going to the phones. As you know, my book, I am so proud of it. It's called The Quickening, and the first printing came out about, a month and a half ago? And the first printing sold in 2 weeks. Whoosh! Like that, it was gone. And for a month, we had no books. The second printing has now arrived and is available now, as of right now, for immediate shipment. You can still get, even though it's the second printing, it is the first edition. It is a first edition copy, and you can get an autographed copy. What I'm going to do is, as I was doing when we had books before, and thank you all for buying them in such a tremendous frenzy, I was autographing books as fast as I could. I am going to continue to do that until I get tired of it. I've had a break, so it makes it a little easier. But I will tell you on the radio when I am no longer autographing books. It doesn't mean you can't get it. It just means you will not get an autographed version. So here they are, ready for immediate shipment. So I would be very honored to have you read this. It is a book that I had to write, one of those things that was easy because it just sort of poured out. And I would value your opinion and feedback on the book as well. And I'm not going to go into, at this moment, what it's all about. If you're a listener to this program, you know. So there you go. They're available until I say otherwise. Judging from the way the last printing went, I wouldn't wait. 1-800-864-7991. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, Art, this is Dixie in Planet Berkeley.
Yes, sir.
If John is still listening, there's a committee called the Committee on Democratic Communications, the National Committee of the National Lawyers Guild.
Mm-hmm.
And he should get in touch with them at 558 Cap Street, C-A-P-P, in San Francisco, 94110, or he can call them at...
No.
Oh, do you know what that phone number?
No, not on the air.
Okay, but anyway, tell them to get in touch with them because they will give him good advice as to what, how to handle his case. His lawyer should get in touch with him.
Yeah, all right. Well, that sounds like a pretty fair idea to me, too. You know, I'm sorry to see it. I think that would not have occurred in the commercial marketplace. But I understand how it occurred with a board of directors and a publicly funded kind of deal. Still, it smacks terribly of censorship, and the manner in which it was done sounds rather unprofessional to me. In other words, you would expect a series of warnings of some sort prior to police chiefs coming in and all that sort of thing. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Art.
Yes.
All right. This is Bob. I'm listening to you on WTAM.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if anybody has brought this up to you, but before, you remember when that broadcast was with you and was on Strange Universe, it was dealing with Courtney Brown?
Oh, yes.
Over here, when they broadcast it over the TV, it, to me it seemed like somebody was trying to jam the broadcast.
I wouldn't know about that, and I don't even... where are you?
It was strange. I mean, it
where are you, sir? Where are you?
I'm in Akron, Ohio.
Akron, Ohio. So it was your local Akron TV station or what?
Yeah, it was one of the local stations. It was either a major mess up there at the, you know, a Strange Universe, or somebody was trying to jam the audio.
Well, I saw the broadcast here, and it came through clearly, so that would indicate that it was probably at your local station.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to it, and it was the audio part, and it was a radio station. I was unable to get the call letters or anything, but I did manage to figure out from the way they were talking. It was like a light rock FM station. It sounded like it was coming from Las Vegas.
Pretty weird. I wouldn't know what to say about that. Here it was clear, so it was a local phenomenon, whatever it was. I watched the network feed. And as a matter of fact, I also saw the local feed on the UPN network from Las Vegas. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, sir. Art, this is Bill from Cleveland Heights, Ohio.
Hello, Bill.
It was really nice hearing your wife tonight. She sounds obviously like a very wonderful woman.
She is.
My question is it true, I believe you said several nights ago, that you don't permit scripture to be read on the air?
That is correct.
I see. Well, you had Elizabeth Clare Prophet on several weeks ago.
Yes.
And she read two Hindu mantras on the air.
That is correct.
And you permitted that.
That is correct.
Well, it sounds to me like a dichotomy here.
You mean like a double standard?
Yeah.
It may well be. The reason I don't allow scripture read on the air, although I have allowed some guests to read scripture, I don't allow callers to read it, so that this doesn't turn into some sort of religious church service of the air, which I'm not going to allow to occur. So when I have a guest, like Elizabeth Clare Prophet, or, for that matter, Christian guests that I've had, I have allowed, at that time, scripture quoting. In one instance, I even did it myself, from Revelations.
Do you think that Elizabeth Clare Prophet, her New Age philosophy, is a religion?
I have no idea.
Well, Alice Bailey, you know, in the 1930s. Oh, by the way, I meant to mention this to you. Your term, the quickening.
Yes.
That term was mentioned by a very famous Masonic philosopher, Manly P. Hall, back in the 1940s.
Really?
Yes.
Well,
have you ever heard of Manly P. Hall, Art?
As a 99th degree Mason, I'm unable to comment.
You don't want to comment, do you?
No.
No, I didn't think so.
All right. Well, I've satisfied your suspicion then. Oh, boy. My policy on scripture quoting is quite clear, I think. And it is that from the audience, I do not allow it. Otherwise, we get into the battle of the scripture quoters. Though from my guests, I have allowed it. That may seem a policy that doesn't make sense to you, but to allow it is to begin to get into a battle of scripture quoting, since everybody interprets the Bible and scripture in so many different ways. It is for Sunday at church, not on this radio program. So there are rare exceptions to the rule. I even broke it once myself. But as a general rule, I do not allow callers to quote scripture. That's the name of the game. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, this, let me turn my radio down.
Okay, thank you.
Light my cigarette. This is Curtis from San Diego. I wanted to mention that when President Clinton apologized to the black folks that had to go through those experiments.
Tuskegee.
Yeah, I never knew about that until that day, but I'm puzzled that anybody that was involved with that isn't going to be brought to justice if there's anybody alive.
Well, there are about 8 survivors of it, sir. I have not heard of anybody being brought to justice.
Well, they sure are trying to find those old Nazis that are hiding out.
Yeah, I hear you.
And, you know, I don't care if they're on... I know they must be pretty old. I don't care if they're on...
Well, it's a very thin difference, but it is worth noting, I suppose, that we did not give these black men syphilis. In other words, we did not infect them. We simply did nothing to stop the infection. And it's a very thin difference indeed, but it is a bit of a difference from, you know, what the Nazis did. That does not in any way condone what was done. It was horrible. And somebody might even fairly suggest that it amounted to genocide. It was horrible. Horrible. I mean, they knew damn well what these men had, and ostensibly the reason for allowing it to go on was to find out what would happen when it went to terminal stage. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Excuse me?
Excuse you. You're excused.
Who am I talking to?
Who are you calling?
Art Bell.
Bingo.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What? Don't be sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've just been trying to get through to you for so long.
Well, you're through, so you better go ahead and say what you want
to
say.
Well, I hate to go from such a serious subject you was talking about. When you were talking about the dinosaurs, You've read 3001, haven't you?
No. 2001 and 2010.
Well, there's in the second or third chapter, Arthur C. Clarke writes about bringing back dinosaurs like they did in Jurassic Park.
Yes.
But instead of having them as an amusement, he sort of messes with their brains, tames them to be a servants of human beings.
I'm not sure that I would want a tame, or even try to tame a, say, a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Can you imagine that? I watch my cats and multiply that by about 1 million and imagine the scratch you'd get. I walk around wounded half the time anyway.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 26, 1997.
Getting a lot of faxes from Alex in Phoenix. Art, I observed a phenomenon very similar to what you saw today. I was passing some time in downtown Phoenix, and my attention was drawn to a high-altitude aircraft traveling east to west at about 2:30 p.m. Well, the timing's wrong here. I was following along the contrail with my eye when I noticed a bright stationary spherical object near the contrail. Fixed my gaze on the bright stationary object for 5 minutes or so when I noticed a similar object moving toward the stationary object. As the second object neared the second object became stationary and the first object began to move. I was able to keep these two objects in view for about 20 minutes before they seemed to gain in altitude and fade from sight. This is the second time I've seen this particular phenomenon. It was approximately 6 to 8 months ago that I saw a single spherical silverish appearing object at a very high altitude during the day while I was looking in the same direction. That's east-southeast from downtown Phoenix. Your sightings seem to be very much in line. Well, yeah, it's true. I don't know what to make out of it. It was the second unknown but definitely weird object that I've seen in my life. That makes two. I never thought I'd see one. Anyway, onward.
Now we take you back to the night of May 26, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Back to the lines. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art.
Hello.
Morning. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Nice to hear Ramona tonight.
Well, there was a reason.
I understood. You know who she kind of sounded like?
No.
Don't get offended now. She kind of sounded a little bit like Robin Quivers.
Is that right? You know, it's funny. I just finished watching Howard's movie.
Oh, did you like it?
Yeah, actually, I did.
Well, you know, they got a big radio war going up here with Howard Stern. He just came into town here last month or so.
Yeah, that'll create a war, all right.
By the way, this is Carl in Minneapolis, and I'm the guy who gave you Silver Charm.
I think that anybody in radio or one of Howard's fans would definitely enjoy the show. I think that it was probably fairly faithful in terms of, I mean, obviously there was some embellishment. But otherwise, with regard to the way radio is, it was pretty faithful.
Yeah, he seems like a nice, I don't know, he gets kind of, some of his stuff that he does is too wild for me, I think.
Well, right, but, right.
Anyway, the reason I called, I was wrong about the date of the Belmont race, which is the third leg of the Triple Crown for the horse racing.
You were wrong about something?
Wow, I was just wrong about the date.
This is a first.
No, actually, this is not the first.
All right.
I also am the guy who told you that there'd be a comet 1 week after Hale Bopp went away.
Yep.
And I was wrong about that.
Well.
So I'll take my lumps. But anyway, I am so sure that Silver Charm will win the Belmont and win the Triple Crown.
Yeah.
That I am inviting all your listeners
yeah.
who place a bet, and if they lose, send it to me, and I will reimburse them.
Yeah,
oh, my roommate's
right.
even laughing at me.
Yeah, sure he is, and so am I.
I'm serious, though.
You're out of your mind.
Well, that's how sure I am that they're going to win. Oh, my roommate said he's going to bet $1 million. He don't have $1 million. Oh, he's borrowing money from me every week.
Yeah, don't say things that, you know, be careful what you wish for. I mean, your roommate is absolutely right. Don't make such guarantees. You want to tell people to go out and bet on Silver Charm, be my guest. But don't guarantee to refund their bets if you're wrong.
Hold on, I'm on the radio. Hold on a second. Okay, I also would like to say to Danelle, I know she's listening, that Art Bell will never come to your house for dinner. Get over it, honey.
All right, see you later. You never know. You just never know. She said she'd let me smoke. That's a serious concession. He has been right about Silver Charm twice in a row now. And twice in a row, I have neglected to go and lay money down. which I can do legally here in Nevada. Even got a sports book right downtown Pahrump. You watch. I'll go down and make the bet, and it'd be the third time, and it won't be the charm. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Art?
I'm doing all right. Where are you?
This is the D-Man from San Luis Obispo County, KPRL.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Turn it off, yeah.
I had an experience happen about 1 year ago, sometime about this time of the year, in fact. And that's when I started listening to you, by the way, because it was strange and unusual. But I was out outside about 2 a.m, and I'm in the military. I've seen all kinds of things flash and flares and missiles and all kinds of stuff. You know, almost every type of plane, jet, helicopter there is.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anything so fast, and it's pretty darn close too. And
well,
it was the brightest green light I've ever seen.
Count yourself among the millions.
I mean, is that sound out of the question from some of the reports you've heard?
What question?
Like this green light. It's the strangest looking green I've ever seen. They don't even use it. They ought to, because it's almost semi-stealth, you know. It's if you're at a far distance or flying low, that would be like the perfect color. I mean,
yeah, but you saw it at night, right?
Yes, I did.
Well, that means it must have been lit up. So that's not very stealthy.
Well, it was flying low, and there was a lot of mountains and stuff around, and it passed through them. And
passed through them?
Yes, and I thought it was like a meteor or something. I go, no, meteors are not that color.
Well, it may have passed behind them and not through them. Count yourself among the millions, just like me, just like my wife. Millions of Americans that have seen things in the sky for which there is no rational nor conventional explanation, period. They are there. That's not to say they're not ours. I cannot come to that conclusion. But I can tell you this. Either way, it's a big, big story. In other words, either we have things so far advanced that you would be shocked, surprised, and we all would, in our arsenal, or they are from somewhere else, or some time else, or, you know, who knows? God, who knows? All I know is that millions and millions of Americans, in fact, even a majority, have either seen or definitely believe these things exist. Eternally, I suppose, we're going to have to wonder what they are. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Art.
Yes.
Yeah, first of all, I want to say that I got your book.
Oh.
Fantastic.
The Quickening.
The Quickening. Fantastic.
Thank you. Have you made it all the way through?
Well, I'll tell you what, I picked it up the day I bought it. I brought it home. I started reading it at 6, and I finished at 10.
4 hours?
Yep.
4 hours, really?
Yeah.
You are a fast reader.
Well, the book was fantastic.
For 330-some-odd pages, you're a fast reader.
I think it was 375, something like that.
Well, it's sitting in the other room. It's three. Well, I'll go look.
But it was a great book. I enjoyed it tremendously. I have 3 friends at work that want to borrow it. I mean, I told them, buy your own. I'm afraid I won't get it back. Number two, I told my father about you. By the way, my name is Mark, and I'm in West Hollywood.
Yes, sir.
I told my father about you, and he lives in Michigan. He lives right outside of Detroit. You know what station he can pick you up at?
WCHR in Detroit, 1200.
1200?
Right. And they are due to increase power to 25,000 watts sometime in the next month or two, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he's not in the pattern right now, he will be shortly.
Okay. What time would you be starting over there?
It's a 3-hour difference. Detroit is East Coast, so it's 2 in the morning.
Okay, yeah, so, okay, great.
All right.
One more thing. The guy you had on your show the other this past weekend, Sean?
Yes, Sean David Morton.
Did he say Hermosa Beach, where his office is?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Great. All right, well, I enjoy your show tremendously, and I really appreciate you being on the radio.
Thank you. And I appreciate your call and your review of the book. I'm getting very good reviews of the book. But, you know, I know it sounds conceited. I expected that. This is a book that had to be written. Do you know what I mean when I say that? This was not... the first book I wrote, called The Art of Talk, was, it was about me. Autobiography, and a lot of photographs in it, and so forth and so on. This is a complete departure. A complete departure from the first book. And this just absolutely had to be written. It's one of those things that you didn't... In other words, I didn't set out... I thought I would never write another book, because I'm not an author, or I guess I am now. But I'm not an author, and I had no desire to write another book until this finally built to the point where I had to do it. It was really one of those weird things. I had to prove what I was talking about. And without being able to sit here and detail it, point by point by point by point, and prove what I was saying on the air, I thought the best way to do it was to put it on paper. And so I did. He read that book in 4 hours? Woo! Pretty good. In fact, that's got to be some kind of speed reading. I'll go get a copy here in a minute, and we'll see how many pages there are, but it's like 330 some odd pages. I could be wrong about that. I'm pretty sure I'm right. Any of the rest of you who have now read it and digested the material, I would very much welcome your comments. This book is going to cause a great deal of consternation and trouble when it sinks in. And, of course, the first printing just went absolutely gone, you know, in 2 weeks. I'm very thankful. The second printing is finally here. It's a first edition. It remains a first edition. And you can still get an autographed copy. But that's only until I get sick of signing books. So you should order now. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Very well, actually.
That's good. This is Ron from Tampa, Florida.
Yes, sir.
Listen, I was listening to your Dreamland program Sunday night.
Yes, sir.
And I heard the call-in for the sightings over Palm Beach.
Correct.
What was the... outcome of that? I didn't get to listen to the rest of the program.
Well, there, of course, the initial report was on Dreamland, and Peter Davenport came on and explained what he was getting. I had a follow-up today that indicated the Palm Beach Sheriff's Department was evacuated due to a Halion activation, completely evacuated within hours of all those sightings. So I have no more for you right now. When I do, it'll be on the air.
Oh, okay, that's very good. Here in Tampa, you were talking about the weather.
Yes, sir.
And we've been having some pretty freaky storms here.
I know.
Last couple of weeks. We had the one that came through Tampa, went through a car dealership. It was a tornado, and it snapped a flagpole, I believe, snapped a couple of telephone poles mm-hmm. above the ground. Excuse me, I'm kind of nervous.
I understand. No, look, the weather is changing, sir.
Yeah, and
I didn't state that as a question. I'm convinced our weather is changing.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm...
And if you listen to my guest Sunday, if you looked at the Standeo data from Australia on the website, or even if you talk to the National Weather Service people, and as a matter of fact, I heard last hour, top of the hour news, they are now predicting, ha ha ha, surprise, this is going to be an unusually severe hurricane season, something you would be also concerned about in Tampa. They are now predicting an unusual number of strong hurricanes. Oh, what a surprise.
Oh, well, I'll have to be watching that, because I've actually been taking some of the advice I've been hearing on your program. I've been trimming back some of the trees in my yard and
yep.
trying to lock things down so
yep.
I won't have anything come through the house or go into the neighbor's yards or anything like that. So.
Well, you can only do so much, but there are certain things, thank you, that you ought to do. You ought to have food on hand. Really? I'm telling you guys, have some food on hand. Have a radio that will play. The Beijing is one good example. So you can get information. Have some auxiliary light batteries. Solar energy is good. I've got some solar panels on the roof that charge a bigger battery that I use when the power goes out. I've got an auxiliary generator. So if you can have that kind of thing, fine. If you can't, do what you can. Have candles. Have some water stored, which you keep fresh. I mean, there's a lot of things, just common sense things that you can and should do. Because things are going to get rough, weather-wise. I believe that. And I forgot to mention that report that I heard about an hour ago with regard to the National Weather Service pronouncement regarding hurricanes. But no surprise. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi there. I'm calling from Los Angeles, California. My name is Doug.
KABC land.
Yes, it is. I wanted to ask you something, Art.
Sure.
You were stationed in the Air Force, correct?
That is correct.
Were you stationed at any time at Vandenberg?
No, I was never at Vandenberg. Closest I got was when I came back from Okinawa, and I was discharged at March Air Force Base.
Well, in March?
Yep.
I was there for a little time myself. No, I was rather curious about that. I was going to mention something else. Have you heard of the phenomena that has been occurring in California City on the Mojave Desert concerning the Holy Mother's appearance?
I have, and I've also, there is another story that I've been following regarding down in Florida. Are you familiar with the building in Florida? I think it's in Clearwater, Florida.
Yes, I am, and I'm also familiar with the place that's been occurring in Conyers, Georgia.
Well, wait now. Let me give you some late news on Clearwater.
Okay. All right.
Somebody apparently over the last day or two went by that building and sprayed the image with acid.
And what was the result?
Oh, well, you can imagine the results. It ruined the image.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying...
Somebody vandalized it, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, boy. I'm sorry to hear that, because in this day and age, the way this world is going,
yeah,
everybody needs something to hold on to.
I know, and so some jerk has to go by and throw acid on it. Great, huh?
Well, yeah, when you think about how they laughed at Christ when they nailed him to the cross. Much the same thing.
Well...
No, I was going to mention about what's out there in the desert. I was involved with it a couple of years back, and was one of the individuals that ended up healed out there, and things of that nature do occur.
Yes, sir, they do. Thank you very much. They do. I believe in miracles. How about that? I do. I believe in miracles. Things as unexplained in our skies occur, as unexplained down here on Earth occur. Spontaneous remissions, things that you can only call a miracle, occur. And they're coming more and more frequently, and I think there's a good reason for that. Just like there's a good reason for the complete idiots who would throw acid, they believe it was acid, on a building to ruin something that millions of people... And by the way, the police are actively searching for whoever did this. We've got a photograph of what appears to be the Virgin Mary, which covers the entire side of a building in Clearwater, Florida. And we've got a photograph prior to the acid being thrown. Very much quickening, folks, in every respect. And this comes under the category of a social quickening, I suppose. A wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Arthur. You got the radio.
Yep, turn that radio off.
It's off.
Good. Yeah. Where are you?
Dave in Milwaukee.
Yes, sir.
I just, that's pretty sad about the Virgin Mary, first of all.
Yep.
Did you hear about the bees, the honeybees?
95% gone,
right,
sir.
That's, they said it's going to damage fruit, make the crops bitter.
Are you surprised?
I don't know if I'm surprised. I don't know if there's any way to get them back, hopefully.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if there is or not. They're busily trying to bring back a woolly mammoth right now. So I suppose somebody, while they're still here, ought to make an attempt at bringing back the honeybees. But it is true what he just said. About 95% of the domestic honeybee population is now gone. And they sort of just dropped that on us the other day. Quickening? Yes. Sure it is. That's what this book is all about. Just part of it. So if you get a chance, while I'm still doing autographed copies, and while we still have some to sell, give them a call and get one on the way. It's The Quickening.
Trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue. Clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry.
Premier Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired May 26, 1997.
You know when I fell in love with this song? When I saw The Twelfth Monkey. What a movie that was. Anyway, good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. The following is from Diane in Los Angeles. Art, what can I say, except I'm sorry I read the LA Times yesterday. They had a two-page article on cannibalism in Russia. What seems to be occurring is street children are being taken and eaten. They are the victims, street children. Many of them, they think as many as 12 or 13 children now, have been actually taken by a serial cannibal and eaten, and they're finding pieces all over the place. I'm sorry, but this is true. Diane goes on to say, and now it's going on in Russia, Korea, and China. She's absolutely correct. I saw the report. In fact, it was on CNN. And I don't know how much sicker society can become before whoever is out there takes one big look at this and cleans out the petri dish. I'm telling you, we're on our way to an event. Believe it. We're on our way to an event. And I'm not a prophet, so I'm not going to tell you what that is. I don't know. I wrote it in the book. When you read this book, you will be convinced, as I am, that we are on the way to an event. Or you might just, if you wish, read the daily newspaper, as Diane in L.A. did. Or listen to the hourly newscasts, if you can handle it. But it's obvious that in every category of human endeavor, we are racing toward an event of some sort. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. I'll just grab the radio.
Okay. Appreciate that.
Doug from Vancouver.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'm fine.
Good. Art, I've been trying to get in for a while here. There's a incident that apparently happened in Brazil, and I've never heard you talk about it of all the times I've listened.
Yes, in fact, I had Stanton Friedman on talking about that incident, sir. I'm sure it's the same one.
Yeah, apparently they've captured three aliens and the fire department was involved.
That's right. That's what the claim is. Yes, I did a program on it.
Oh, you did?
Oh, sure. That kind of thing doesn't get away from me.
Okay, I'm just wondering, like, do you have any, that's a pretty incredible claim there.
The U.S. military is also alleged to be involved.
Exactly.
And once you get the military involved in these things, sir, they just disappear.
Right. Now, what is your take on John Carpenter? Do you know him at all?
I do. I have interviewed John Carpenter. Mm-hmm. There's hardly anybody in this field, I think, well, that's not true. There's always somebody.
Yeah.
But I've interviewed most of the people in the field.
I'm just wondering, how do you rate him as...
Very highly.
Credibility, credibility?
High on the credibility scale.
Are you familiar with any of these associates in Brazil that are the head of the MUFON in Brazil?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I only had to go thank you on what Stanton had to say, and he interviewed some of the eyewitnesses, and it seemed very clear and unambiguous. So that's all I can tell you right now. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello.
Hi, Art. How you doing?
I'm okay.
This is Kevin from Lakewood.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I finished reading a book, and I'm about halfway through reading it twice here.
Oh, The Quickening?
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's 333 pages.
333 mark, 337 total.
Right, okay.
To be exact.
To be technical, right?
I thought I was about right.
I called a while back.
Well, wait, hold it. What are your impressions?
Of the book? Oh, I liked it.
Thank you.
Great.
On the mark?
No, I'd say so. Quite scary.
Yep.
A lot of things near got my attention, I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very well written.
Well, what I tried to do was simply document facts. Now, we put a little bit of fiction in the front of each chapter to try to... the idea of that was to try to show you where the facts presented were going to take us. But 90% of the book is simply documented fact. And that's what's so scary about it.
Yeah, I like the way you put the little story in the front there. It kind of brings the situation more to life, I think.
Yes, sir.
Makes it seem real, I guess is the word for it.
Mm-hmm.
More real than make you imagine it anyway. Yeah, a couple callers back was talking about the Virgin Mary appearances out in California City.
Yes, sir.
A good friend of my mother's goes out there once a month. And she brought back some photos with her that she had taken out there on an instant camera. There was not a cloud in the sky, and she took about 25 photos, and every photo came back with something, an image,
mm-hmm.
Whether it was a picture of what looked to be Jesus,
mm-hmm.
Others looked to be Mary, some looked to be angels, you could see crosses in the formation of what looked to be like clouds.
I think there's going to be more and more of this.
Very, very strange.
I agree, but not unexpected. Thank you very much for the call. Okay, let me walk you through contents of The Quickening, all right? I've never done that. I suppose I ought to. The introduction, The Quickening defined. We, in other words, define The Quickening in the beginning. Chapter 1 deals with technology, America's technology, Russia's, the Internet, fiber optics, virtual reality. We deal in Chapter 2 with our economy, as I told you. America's heavy load, I've talked about it many times, the European Union, the road to global economies. Chapter 3 is government fragmenting governments, American sovereignty in decline, and global government on the rise. Chapter 4 deals with societal matters, the American social fabric weakening, the militias, terrorism, illegal immigration. Chapter 5 deals with religion and spirituality, the New Age movement, modern psychology, UFOs, extraterrestrials, the paranormal, one world religion. Chapter 6 deals with the environment, environmentalists, American consumerism, our natural resources, global warming, ozone, nuclear radiation. Chapter 7 deals with disease and famine, emerging viruses, emerging bacteria and parasites, venereal diseases, plural, Biological Warfare and Global Solutions. Chapter 8 deals with Earth changes, volcanoes, earthquakes, hurricanes, droughts, astronomical hazards, global preparedness. In the beginning of the book, it serves up a warning, which simply says, the following material may not be suitable for those of you not prepared to face the realities of the future. These may seem like isolated snapshots of some far-off world. In truth, they are all symptoms of the same cause, the quickening. And again, this is not a book that I just set out to write so I could write a book. It's a book that I had to write. You understand the difference? There really is a big difference. Even when I did my first book, it was a book I set out to write. This one came from me. I don't even know how to explain the difference. The first one was difficult. It was autobiographical. It was painful in some ways to, you know, dig through your life. Try it sometime. But the second one demanded to be written. It came from inside. Because I know what's going on. I don't precisely know where it's leading, but I know that it's going to get there pretty soon. So that's kind of a leap through a content of some of my book.
Now we take you back to the night of May 26, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
This is Jeff from Henson again.
Yes, Jeff.
Got an idea for a new book in case you're thinking of what to be writing after The Quickening.
I am not thinking of that, but go ahead.
I've often wondered if there's ever been, of course, you know, being a military man, that there used to be a ship recognition manuals of all types of vessels during wartime.
Sure.
Has anyone ever compiled a nice coffee table book on about a UFO recognition manual?
You mean kind of like a Jane's?
Oh, yeah. I mean, nothing but pictures, a little bit of text at the bottom, nothing but photographs. Coffee table book size, huge. And just have just hundreds of pages and just all kinds of listings in terms of shapes and where they've been seen and maybe a national map on the back.
You really want to get people going and make them angry? I'll tell you what we call it. You ready? I got the title.
Okay.
We call it the UFO Bible.
Uh-oh. Have to make it sound more scientific. The UFO textbook.
Can you imagine how angry that would make people?
Not really. They've already got the gun Bible and everything else.
Do they?
I don't think it's going to make people mad. Which direction was that UFO you recently saw heading when you saw it last?
That was yesterday, sir.
Uh-huh.
Now, the UFO, the jet was coming from the east-southeast and headed to the west-northwest.
Mm-hmm.
The UFO was near the, and followed for a period of time, the jet's contrail and way behind it. And then it stopped dead for, 2 or 3 minutes at least, and then began to move south and gain altitude until we finally just lost it as a pinpoint. Not because of the horizon, but because it had gained so much altitude, that baby was gone.
According to Egon Bach's book, these things are often drawn to sunlight.
Well, this was not drawn to sunlight, sir. It was, thank you, the sun was short of high in the sky, or 12 o'clock, short of that. It was about 11:40 in the morning when we saw it. And, by the way, I'm very much looking forward to hearing from, as I have been already, getting email from or faxes from anybody in this area who saw the same object I did, or better yet, somebody who had more presence of mind than I did and went and got a good camera. I don't know why in the hell it happened. I can't explain it. But I've got a 35mm camera. And it's got a very limited zoom to it. It's good for pretty close work. And I knew that if I went and got it, there was no point. That actually went through my mind. I thought about going to get the camera, but then I thought, no, it's just going to be a dot of light, meaningless. And what I didn't think about was my 8mm video camera, which has like a 60-to-1 zoom. And you know what? I didn't even think of that until tonight, that I could have dragged that out. Stupid, huh? Especially for somebody who's been dealing in these things for as long as I have. But I'll tell you something. It doesn't prepare you. Honest to God, it doesn't prepare you. The fact that I've talked about these things, you would think that I would have trained myself to do something like that. But when you see it, you're frozen. Frozen, afraid that it will blink out, that if you run in the house, it'll be gone when you get back. All of those things. And there is no good rational explanation for why I didn't think about that 8mm camera and go and get it. You know, it does no good to kick myself now. I might have had a chance with that, actually. The 35mm would have been useless. That much ran through my little consumed brain, but the rest did not, so I have no excuse. Except that we were transfixed. And when you see something like this, believe me, trust me, you are transfixed. It's not like it was affecting me in any way, I don't think. It was just that I was transfixed. I couldn't move. We were in the business of trying to get it with the binoculars, it was visible with the naked eye. But the binoculars brought it to a resolution that made it an obvious saucer, circle, and it was glowing like a light bulb turned on. Now, the jet, on the other hand, which by this time was moving to the west-northwest, was not glowing at all, nor did the sun glint off it in any way. So, besides, the sun was behind the object. So the glow we saw was actually coming from the object. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
I'll get the radio.
Good. Get that radio.
Another thing, I was thinking of another thing that comes under the heading of avarice in the broadcast establishment was I was listening to Gil Gross once, you know, and he was talking about, you know, that girl in California that lost her arms in that crime?
Yes.
Well, they were going to have on Channel 11 in Seattle, I'm calling it from Oklahoma, something to, like a trust fund for her to give her arms. And she didn't want to do a broadcast.
Well, you can't, she can't, there's no way for this girl to get her arms back, sir.
Well, I meant, you know, like a prosthesis.
Oh, I see, yes.
So anyway, the guy that takes care of her is real good to her. And then they were going to do a broadcast, but she didn't consent to do it, so they took the trust fund away. And I was thinking about, like, you were making a joke about that time, if you were going to die, somebody was going to benefit from it, and... this is like an analogy to it, but it was really cruel, you know.
Well, maybe she just simply didn't want it. I think that poor, poor young woman probably wants to be out of the public spotlight. Maybe that's what it had to do with. And maybe that's why she didn't want to do it. And I don't blame her. I'll never forget that. You know the young lady we're talking about. The man who assaulted the young lady, raped her, chopped her arms off, served time and got out. He's out now. That's who he's talking about. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Arbel.
How are you?
Hi, I'm calling from Merced, California.
Yes, ma'am.
KYOS.
Right.
And last year in 96, on Easter Sunday, my friend and I, we were getting ready to go back to my house, and we came to a stop sign, and she looked to the left, I looked to the right, and I seen a UFO, right? So I told her, I go, let's follow it. So we followed it, and it's like it knew what direction we were going to go before we went, right? And we zigzagged through town.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, it's like sometimes lights follow me. Okay. I don't have a car no more, so, you know, it hasn't happened. But I like the sky, and I see a lot of things. And I just seen something the other night, me and my neighbor. And we watched it, and but I've seen, like, orange football-shaped ones. I've seen my son and I, we've seen, like, a triangle. They were, like, in a triangle in the sky.
Yep.
And these things were shooting out of the bottom. It was like an upside-down triangle. And so he ran upstairs, and he got the neighbor, so we have somebody else to see it. And
I hear
that. And he watched these things just shooting out of, like, what we thought was a star. But it was in the shape of a triangle, and it was, like, toward the northeast.
Well, I understand. I appreciate your report. That's what you want to do, is try and get somebody else to verify it. I don't think I would have gone on the air tonight, or the first time, for that matter, if my wife had not been there, you know, to back me up. I just wouldn't do it. And what I'm hoping now is that somebody got some video or a good photograph of what I saw yesterday. Believe me, I'll know it if I see it. And one last time, this is the big opportunity, since our second printing is here, if you want a copy of my book, The Quickening, autograph copy, that is, you should order soon, or as soon as you can get in. And if you cannot get in tonight, because we're just starting all this out again, continue to try during the day, and you will eventually get through. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 26, 1997. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from May 26, 1997.
Listen to this. From Reuters, Dateline Miami, Memorial Day, the unofficial start of summer. This year heralds for coastal residents a, quote, bleaker than normal Atlantic hurricane season, 6 months of torrential rains, deadly winds, and pounding waves. Forecasters expect more tropical storms and hurricanes than average during the 97 season, prompting Colorado State University professor and weather forecaster Bill Gray to exclaim, "This does not bode very well for the U.S. Southeast and Caribbean." Should the storm forecast for 1997 prove accurate, the three-year period would be the busiest ever, ushering in what could be decades of increased storm activity. That is from UPI, and then there's several stats in the middle of the story. Are you surprised? Not me. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. How are you doing?
Okay.
This is Dave here in Sandy Valley, your neighbor to the south.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was calling you to let you know about something I saw about a month ago here. Might explain some of this UFO mystery stuff. It was early in the morning, about 6:30, about a little ways after sunrise. And I see these planes coming, hugging the valley below the horizon, traveling about 200 feet. They came, I'd say, within about a half a mile. They were about the size, about half the size of a commercial airliner.
Mm-hmm.
They were gray, kind of a dust gray, and silent. silent and no sound from these planes.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking, about a couple of years ago, I had read in Newsweek that they were developing this anti-sound with these microprocessors that made a...
Well, it's sound cancellation, sir.
Yeah, yeah, that.
I'm very well aware.
So they must have perfected that, because...
Really, and then they introduced it to a round craft that emits light.
Yeah.
Does that explain what I saw?
That sounds like what I saw. They were just, instead of having swoop back wings, they had more like straight out wings and real slow lumbering craft. But anyway, I'm thinking, because the way that I saw them flying, if a person was to see those at night, they may, you know, look kind of odd, especially since there was no sound from these things.
Mm-hmm. All right, sir, there actually was sound. What you're talking about is sound cancellation, and that's a pretty well-known technology now.
Now we take you back to the night of May 26, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
What you're about to hear is called Area 51. It's by Dewey Williams and the Extremes. Business about the pilot, intercepted, shot down. Anyway, good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and this is CBC. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Mr. Bell. I was listening this evening to you talking about what you seen last night.
Yes.
And it brought back...
Yesterday at 11:40 in the morning.
Oh, in the morning?
Yes, ma'am.
Ooh. Well, I had an experience 28 years ago when I first moved to the middle of the Nevada desert out halfway between Elko and Battle Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
there's a place out there called Crescent Valley where they have Cortez Gold Mine. My second husband and I had just moved out there. It was in probably August. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and the bedroom was just really, really bright with light. And I thought, well, couldn't figure out what was going on. So I kind of raised up and looked out the window to see what was going on. And there was a bright light that was just down below the trailer. So I got up and I went out the back door and stood at the back of the trailer, and I seen this great big huge orange kind of a pulsating ball.
Yep.
And it was not too awful far above the ground. I mean, it was right about the level where the telephone poles were at. But down there was three camp trailers and two tents that had been pitched by some of the men that were working out at the gold mine. So I stood out there and I watched, and they were scrambling around there and running around just like they were chickens with their heads cut off. And one of them yelled, "Get your gun, Ralph, get your gun." So Ralph ran into the trailer and he came out, and I heard bang, bang. "Ralph, I think that you hit it. Hit, shoot it again." So there was another couple of bangs. "I think you hit it again. Shoot some more, Ralph." So Ralph shot some more. And pretty soon this thing started taking off to kind of at a slow raise away from the trailers and the tents.
Yes.
And it took off, and they said, you could hear them all over the whole valley, but this thing had lit up the whole area out there, and it wasn't very well populated at the time. Well, the next morning, I went back in the bedroom and woke my husband up, and by the time I got him woke up to see what was going on, it was like a star out there, so he didn't see a thing.
Yeah, well, I think Ralph was poorly advised to be shooting at that thing. Please, folks, whatever it is you see in the skies, don't shoot at it. Don't shoot at them. Now, there are many ways of looking at this. Now, if they shoot at you, that's self-defense. But to begin shooting at objects that you don't know about in the sky strikes me as just plain damn foolish. And in behalf of the rest of the human race, I beseech you, please do not shoot at these things. See, there's another definite problem. Whatever in the hell they are, and either way you look at it, whether they are advanced military aircraft, ours, or they're from somewhere else, they've got to be pretty advanced to get here and be doing what they're doing. Shooting at them is ill-advised, indeed. West Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, the Italian Stallion. How you doing, Art?
I'm fine.
I got something. I disagree with you on the New World Order. You believe that it's not going to take place, and not in our lifetimes.
That's right. Not in our lifetimes.
But believe it or not, it's unfolding right before us. You really can't tell what, you know, because it's unfolding in front of us. And I believe that.
Well, Mr. Stallion? What is your evidence?
Well, my evidence is if you take one country, and Richard Hoagland's touched on the secret governments and stuff like that, and that is happening, but if you take one country, and if they go or get out of hand, you watch and see, the whole world will be on top of them in a minute.
Well, that's already occurring. That does not make a one-world government, nor does that make a one-world political system. Now, I acknowledge that we're on the way to it, en route to globalism. There's no question about it. But I do not believe that in our lifetime you will see the United States and or any other country cede its sovereignty to a world order of any sort. It is a creeping, crawling process that is underway and is going to take a very long time to develop. So I don't fear it in my lifetime, but on the other hand, I don't deny it its eventuality. Does that make sense? West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hey, Art.
Hello.
This is Mike from Oregon. How you doing?
Oh, fine.
Good. Hey, listen, I was wondering, if we are able to travel into space with the space shuttle, go to the moon and back and stuff like that,
yeah,
what makes anybody think that there are not people out there or beings out there that have been able to do the same thing a lot quicker than we have, or maybe they've been doing it longer than we have?
No, only a fool would dismiss the probability You notice I didn't say it's an absolute, because I don't know what these things are, but yeah, I mean, there are all those suns, more than you can count. We're way out here in the suburbs, if you look at where the Earth really is, where our system really is.
Right.
And, of course, it's likely that life has evolved, and that some of it would have become very advanced technologically. Look at the last decade, or two decades, of advancement made by mankind, and then project that 100, 200 years, which is a cosmic blink, and so it's almost guaranteed.
Right. Well, I was just kind of curious, like, you know, the Area 51 and you know, the government getting involved in that thing in Brazil, like you were talking about earlier with one of your other callers.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden it gets hushed up and we don't hear anything more about it. Does the government actually feel like we're some kind of morons that we don't have any kind of vision as to what the what could actually be out there?
Well, we're treated like morons, and sometimes we act that way. When I had my first sighting, a very serious sighting about 4 years ago, I guess, the local newspaper came out 2 weeks later with this admission that Nellis Air Force Base had said, yes, there was a secret mission over the Pahrump Valley, which is a little valley I'm in, and it had been a C-130 aircraft, which was an utter, absolute insult to anybody's intelligence. And yet, it was swallowed whole by everybody, except those that had seen it. Everybody else swallowed it. Oh, secret mission. Yeah, yeah. C-130. Ah. Nothing special about that. So, in my estimation, that was a public relations tip of the hat to morons. Or that they were treating us like morons, and frankly, to absorb it without questioning anything probably does make us morons. I was so angry about that, I could have spit nails. A wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. Yeah, I had to call...
Turn your radio off, please.
It's off.
Good.
At any rate, I had to call. There's a TV in the background. I listen to the radio and watch TV at the same time. You're commenting on how your 35-millimeter camera wouldn't have been any good. And I just had to say,
I mean, it would have caught a spot of light, yeah.
Well, there are other things, though, especially if you underexpose it. Depends on what kind of film you have. If it catches a spot of light...
I had it loaded with 1,000 speed film.
Oh, that's a drag. Yeah. Because that would have been, you know, I just didn't want people out there to think that a 35 won't do any good. The size of the image and the size of the detail, it doesn't matter what kind of camera you have. A 35-millimeter camera will get a clearer image than any even high-band 8-millimeter, the new digital
zoom. Well, yeah, but that wasn't the point. I had, digital zoom on my 8-millimeter camera. I could have gone to 60-time zoom. And
that's still, it's electronic.
I know, I understand. The resolution would not have been... What I really needed was a 35-millimeter camera with about 200 ASA film and a good telephoto lens. Then I would have been on to something.
Any lens over 80 millimeters.
Yeah.
We've done better than a video.
I hear you. All right, thank you. I know I understand what you're saying, but I've just got the standard lens on a 35-millimeter camera, and it's got a you know, like an 8-to-1 zoom or something. Totally useless for what I would have tried to have done yesterday. But I really still think, and you're right about the resolution, but I sure could have come a lot closer with that 8-millimeter if I'd only thought of that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air, hi.
Oh, wow. Hi, Art, how are you?
Okay.
This is Mike, Southern California.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, I got on so fast. Shocking.
Well, that's how it works. I don't screen calls.
A couple of comments on, you had, you know, some earlier callers talking about, you know, how you don't sermonize on the radio. No Bible quotes.
Yep.
And I was also impressed with your idea of sticking with the facts. You know, you saw something, you're not sure what it is, and you're not jumping to conclusions.
I can't. I mean, anybody can jump to conclusions, but based on what I saw, no, I can't. That'd be foolish.
And you know, I'm somebody who, you know, makes sure I say my prayers daily, and I call myself a Christian, but I still stick to the facts. You know, I read stuff like the Bible, and I think some of it is so true, but on the other hand, I think some of it, you know, is nonsense, like you know, penguins marching up into Noah's Ark. A lot of it's inconclusive. A lot of it's unclear. And I really think that it's really being twisted. I think it was Carl Sagan who once said that we should not be viewing evolution of the world based on an authoritative text. No matter how well-meaning we, you know, want to view the Bible, I don't think God wants us to treat it that way. I myself, you know, I'm not.
Well, I wish Carl could write one more book, and then we'd know.
Anyhow, good show.
Thank you. Take care. Yeah, if Carl could write one more book, that would be the definitive work on. I mean, he's in the right place now, I presume, to know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Billy in Birmingham, WAPI 1070.
Yes, sir.
Art, about the New World Order.
Yes.
What's going on in Paris today? Are you kind of saying you see the bubbles in the water, but you don't feel it getting warmer?
Well, I do feel it getting warmer. I'm just saying it's not going to come to a full boil in our lifetimes.
Okay.
It's going to take longer than that. The guy was trying to call up and saying it's going to happen in our lifetimes. No, it isn't. The expansion of NATO, I do see as the beginning of, I mean, what?
So you see the water bubbling, but it's not warm enough yet.
I see it warming, and I don't see it bubbling yet. It's getting warm. But if you think that the people of this country, this generation, are going to cede sovereignty to some...
Oh, I don't think so.
I don't either.
But anyway, great show. Let somebody else get on.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care. Not in our generation, but it's coming. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art. This is Gina from Sacramento.
Hi, Gina.
You know, I've heard you complain that if there is time travel, how come you've never heard from time travelers?
Well, if there's time travel, then where are the time travelers? Yes.
Well, you've never had an open line for them. How would you know if you haven't had them call you? You got to have an open line some night for time travelers.
That's a good point. I'll do it.
You never know until you ask.
I'll do it.
Great.
All right, how's that?
That's waiting to hear.
All right, I'll do it. Thank you. That's a good... That's Gina. Sure, Gina. Why not? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, I have a clarification for you.
Clarify.
About the girl who had her arms cut off.
Yes.
And the man with the prison, they let him out.
Yes.
Well, that happened in California.
That's correct.
They moved, the man moved to Florida when he got out.
I think that's right, yes.
And he was arrested again in Florida after he murdered somebody.
That is correct, yes, I'm aware of that. Oh, okay. That's right, so he's back in jail now.
He's in jail, they're going to give him the death penalty.
Yeah, I was referring, of course, to the fact that he was released for what he had done to her after
right.
He had done that.
Well, he didn't kill nobody, though. You understand?
I understand.
What's that
sort
music
of.
Mean?
That means it's the end of the program.
Well, so, tell all them Canadians we're watching them.
Do you hear that up there in Canada? Wherever you are, thank you all very much from the high desert. Good night.